From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for January 15th, 2010, or 2010. We didn't decide what to call it last week.
No. But happy MLK Day.
Oh, thank you. And same to you. That'll be Monday.
And well, observed Monday.
Oh, sorry, observed Monday, but January 15th was his birthday.
I'm sorry.
Yes, right, today. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, as we tape this on Thursday afternoon, as we always do. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. That's Anthony York, the historian, the editor of Capital Weekly. You're the resident historian for the Capital Notes podcast.
No? I shudder.
You'll be called on a lot to talk about your...
34 years ago, during the American Revolution, when... Okay.
34 years
exactly.
ago. Anyway, as always, we're here to talk about the week in California politics and government. And I'm calling this week Potomac Fever, even though we're talking about California.
Okay.
Why am I calling it that?
Well, because you're sick of it all.
Right, because I'm out the door, packing the bags. Because I think the bigger stories we would talk about this week all have a link back to Washington, D.C. And I thought it'd be fun, shocking to those of you who listen to the podcast, that we're not going to start with the budget.
Yeah,
fun to not start with the budget.
Note the date. Yeah. Speaking of history.
Note the date. January 15th. The only podcast for 2010 that we don't begin with the budget. So at the end of the week, news that Tom Campbell, the Republican candidate for governor, no longer Republican candidate for governor, Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate.
And not, see, proof that nobody wants to be governor, right?
maybe.
There are no declared Democrats.
And as we said, you know, we've heard this for a while. This was not a surprise when we finally got the formal announcement on Thursday. We'd heard it, you know, we'd heard it rumbling for weeks, and then really the confirmation story started trickling out in the news this week.
That's rumbling.
Oh, rumbling.
Yeah.
Got it. to make sure I knew what the sound effect was. Well, I mean, what do we make of this? I mean, you know, I mean, there are, I think suffice it to say, there are some people scratching their heads wondering if Campbell really is that much better off in a three-way Senate race for the Republican nomination than he was in a three-way gubernatorial race. But there are definite differences. What
right.
Esteemed smart guy, Anthony York, what do you think?
Well, in a nutshell, he's running against one millionaire instead of two, right? I mean, in the governor's race, there was Steve Poizner and Meg Whitman. And there was, you know... There was hope that there were comparisons being made to Gray Davis in 1998, where you had Jane Harman and Al Checky running for the Democrats, and Gray Davis was able to sort of thread the needle and beat both of them in the murder-suicide, as it was called, when Harman and Checky trained their ads on each other, and
Davis came unscathed in the middle.
There are a lot of reasons why Campbell and Davis are not analogous. I mean, Davis had a lot of institutional support from the base of the Democratic Party in 98. Campbell didn't. But I do think that Campbell, although Campbell was second in most polls, sandwiched in between Meg Whitman and Steve Poizner, you know, Poizner just hasn't begun spending his money yet. He put $15 million of his own money into his account late last year, early this year. I don't know when it actually dropped.
Not long ago.
Recently. And, you know, the race is gearing up and there's going to be a barrage of advertising. And I don't think that Campbell doesn't have the grassroots appeal that Davis did in 98. And so the Senate race is wide open. I mean, in the Senate race now, you've got Chuck DeVore, who's sort of running as the quote unquote true conservative in the race. You've got former HP CEO Carly Fiorina, who no one really knows about. And I think Campbell made a calculated bet like, hey, look, nobody knows Fiorina. If she might have a lot of money, but if she falls flat, you know, there might be no other candidate there to pick up the pieces. And so it's sort of, you know, it's kind of like running for vice president or lieutenant governor. And you just, you know, you just sort of hope that, well, never mind. Maybe that's a bad analogy, but...
Well, a couple of things, too. I mean, think about it this way. For, you know, one thing that's been pointed out, I think, and it's, you know, it's worth pointing out, when you are running against really wealthy people, first of all, setting aside the people who can spend their own money, if you look at the Senate race, where you've got Chuck DeVore, who's not personally wealthy either,
right.
you've got a little bit more of a level playing field there, at least with one of your competitors. The campaign finance rules are tighter for federal races than they are for state races.
Thank you, John
so
McCain.
Exactly. So they're going to both kind of be in the same boat there about what they can raise and how they could do it. Campbell has the name ID, which we've talked about. He's been around Republican circles for a while. And Campbell, you know, was out the chute on Thursday, you know, touting, you know, his own polling showing that, you know, he was polling better than Carly Fiorina, who's the national favorite, you know, because she's the name that came through the McCain campaign or Hewlett-Packard career, et cetera, whether she would be the favorite with the Republican Party faithful remains to be seen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not entirely inconceivable. And you know, looking back at the race he got out of, yeah, two really wealthy people, how is he going to make that work? And all three of the candidates for governor, even though Steve Poizner has tried to play up his conservative credentials, they're all mods.
Right.
They're all moderates. And so basically, if you're a diehard Republican person there, you're kind of picking from the same group. And there's not a lot of differentiation. I think there's probably a lot of differentiation in Fiorina Campbell and DeVore.
Although, you know, well, certainly.
More, I should say.
Yeah, but it's hard to know where Fiorina stands and what, you know, she was. In a two-person race, she was presenting herself as the mainstream alternative to Chuck DeVore.
Harder to make now, right?
With three candidates in the race and with Campbell's record as a social moderate, some might say social liberal on a lot of issues. But he's an economic conservative, although he has called for a tax increase in the past, and he's Schwarzenegger's former finance director. But Fiorina's strategy changes. And it was clear. I mean, I don't know about your inbox this morning, but I had four emails from Team Fiorina who are obviously taking Tom Campbell very seriously.
And quick out of the gate to say he's a professional politician. He's just trying to further his political career. It's just, you know, politics.
He's a Barbara Boxer clone spliced with some Don Quixote DNA.
Which is interesting. You know, for those who don't follow it, I mean, you know, obviously you do what you need to do to get your campaign, your candidate elected. But look at the Carly Fiorina campaign management.
Right.
They are Arnold Schwarzenegger acolytes. So they are people who work for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Acolytes, not the right term. And Tom Campbell is very loyal to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He was his director of finance.
Yeah, and they have a good relationship. And that was one of the things that I think Campbell had thought about whatever job he would run for. You've got this very interesting dynamic of all these different people, you know, who were affiliated with Schwarzenegger at one point on different sides now.
Right. Well, and that's just it. I mean, it's the truth is that it's the Republican establishment in California, and they were Wilson people when Pete Wilson was governor, and a lot of the Wilson people became Schwarzenegger people, and that was sort of a shorthand for the moderate mainstream Republican Party. But, you know, these people will be around long after Arnold Schwarzenegger is off the California political stage.
So what do you think if you're Barbara Boxer right now? Really want is Chuck DeVore out of this group.
I think so.
Because that's
the
really
true.
Easy, dramatic, left-right, really Republican, conservative, incumbent, liberal, or whatever she would try to portray that as, senator. Fiorina is a bit of a wild card, again, because she's got this national persona. Tom Campbell is a real interesting wild card because on the issues, as you said, I mean, he's pretty moderate.
Well, if Tom Campbell first ran for U.S. Senate in 1992 when he was a member of Congress, he lost a Republican primary to conservative commentator Bruce Hershenson. It was a close race, a closed Republican primary. And Hershenson almost beat Boxer in 1992, which was a strong Democratic year. If Tom Campbell had won that nomination, if he had beaten Bruce Hershenson, he would still be a U.S. senator. He would have beaten Barbara Boxer. And so,
he lost to Feinstein, though. We have to remember that.
In 2000.
Yeah, that Campbell did run for the Senate, was the Republican nominee against Dianne Feinstein.
But I think, I mean, Barbara Boxer is perennially seen as vulnerable, although she has won re-election twice. Dianne Feinstein is arguably the most popular politician in California. So there was never any real Campbell campaign for Senate in 2000. But this is his third run for Senate. I think if I'm Barbara Boxer, I think that both Carly Fiorina and Tom Campbell are dangerous. And potentially, who knows? I don't know about Chuck DeVore, but a lot of this is going to depend on sort of the national tide. And we've alluded to that before about what sort of year, what's going on in the country come November. And, you know, California is bluer than many states, but I don't think we're, solidly Democratic so much.
We're not as blue as the national people
they
would think us to be.
We're more purple, right?
We're purple.
Yes.
What do you think? I'd be curious to, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to know about what Arnold Schwarzenegger can or can't do or would or wouldn't do in that race.
In the race.
Yeah, this is not, obviously, you know, setting aside the gubernatorial morass, but just looking at this race, Campbell, who he's close to. He's got connections to the Fiorina folks, but I don't know that he has a relationship with Fiorina. I'm not sure that he can do anything with his low approval numbers, or maybe he can. I don't know.
Right. Well, I don't know, you know, I don't know that the governor would endorse in a primary. And frankly, in a Republican primary, I'm not sure a Schwarzenegger endorsement helps.
But he could help him raise money, could he not?
Absolutely.
Nationally. I mean,
absolutely.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's a good draw nationally still.
And I think that, you know, there was a lot of conversation, you know, scuttlebutt about Meg Whitman trying to encourage Tom Campbell out of the race, right? I mean, none of this documented, but there was talk about
Whitman. Anyway.
But this was sort of the capital chatter, right, that Whitman might be a supporter of. There was talk of Campbell running for a down-ticket race, perhaps state controller or state treasurer. And in that instance, there was some indication that Whitman might provide some assistance to Campbell through access to her donors.
And I never bought any of those because those were not good fits for Campbell to run in. I mean, you could if he wanted to run for controller against incumbent John Chung, who's a Democrat, that's going to be tough just because the labor unions and all the other supporters of Chung are probably going to put up money.
Absolutely.
And still, the Democratic registration is going to carry.
And the treasurer.
Running against treasurer, Bill Lockyer, who's sitting on a war chest of money. I mean, you know, about $6 million bucks or $7 million.
Nine, sorry.
Yeah, even more with inflation.
Yeah.
That's not going to work for you. So I never bought those. I mean, this was a better fit if you was going to jump out of a race.
But what's interesting in that, implicit in that, is that Whitman's campaign believes Campbell being out of the governor's race helps her. And I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think there's a lot of speculation about how Campbell's departure from the governor's race affects the Republican gubernatorial primary. And, were the Campbell voters, were they Poisner voters or Whitman voters? I don't know. And I think, wait to see some polling and see how that plays out.
Yeah. And I guess I'm one of those people who's still not convinced that that side of the equation is finished. I mean, you still wonder whether the conservative base of the Republican Party still might want someone else in that race.
I don't know.
It could be over. But, you know, just as a symbolic kind of race or somebody outside of the Republican Party who, may be affiliated with the Tea Party movement or, who knows?
Well, and there was some talk. There was Peter Foy from Ventura County was mentioned as a potential. There was a trial balloon among conservatives to sort of float his name out there as a potential challenger. That never materialized, and Foy is not going to run for governor. So, I don't know who that would be. I mean, hey, Bill Simon, right? Another rich conservative. I mean, I think the field, like the Democratic field, as much as reporters may not want to believe it, I think the field may be set.
No, say it ain't so. Well, let's talk about that side of it just for a moment, since we're on. I mean, even though we're veering from the Potomac Fever theme, but that's okay.
Gubernatorial
race, because the other thing that happened this week is that we got this information that the Democratic Governors Association, again, another affiliation of the National Democratic Party, is making noise that they're willing to put some money into Jerry Brown to try to help him in what we could be an onslaught of personal bucks if it was Whitman or Poisner, but especially of Meg Whitman, who says she would spend $150 million in the contest overall. And again, gets back to that rumbling about, Democrats and Brown and what kind of campaign that might be.
Well, look, this is going to be, I think, the first time we're going to see the governor's race being run largely outside of the campaign. I mean, Jerry Brown is able to raise money, but I was talking to a Democratic strategist this week who said if every major Democratic donor who's ever given to a Democratic gubernatorial candidate in this state maxed out to Jerry Brown, it would only be $40 million. And even that would not be enough for what the party believes they are going to need to defeat either Meg Whitman or Steve Poisner. I think most people think at this point it's going to be Meg Whitman. So there is a concerted effort. I think the Governors Association is the first of many independent expenditure committees that you're going to see pop up on Jerry Brown's behalf. And I think there are going to be IEs on the other side. I think very soon you're going to see anti-Jerry Brown IEs pop up from the Republican side of the ledger because they don't want Jerry Brown to have a free ride through the June primary. They want to begin dragging his poll numbers down now. They want to begin to force him to spend his money now. And so I think this is While the campaign limits may be higher than they are for a race like U.S. Senate here, I think that you're going to see a lot of outside money, just like we see in the legislature now, where the bulk of the money comes from outside the candidates and is in the independent expenditures. I think especially on the Democratic side, you're going to see big, big amounts of money moving through independent expenditure committees.
Yeah. Well, at least we got some developments in that race and all of those races this week, so that's kind of fun.
Can you feel the excitement?
It's
ramping up, though, isn't it? It really is.
For people like us who are political junkies or don't have enough of a life otherwise, it is. And just one more thing on the Campbell DeVore Fiorina contest. I really think the next few weeks, the first few weeks out of the gate, are going to be interesting to see the trying to define themselves and define each other. And also, what does DeVore do here? Because, I mean, this could easily become a Fiorina versus Campbell PR, back and forth, email, whatever contest.
That might be good for
DeVore.
And
maybe that is good for DeVore because he stays out of that
a la Gray Davis. You want to compare Chuck DeVore to Gray Davis.
Chuck DeVore, Gray Davis.
But that might be a more apt comparison just because I think Chuck DeVore is going to get 15-20% of the vote, probably. I mean, just because of the conservative base. It'll be interesting to see what sort of resources Campbell is able to muster, whether people feel more comfortable giving to him in a more open Senate race rather than a gubernatorial race that they figure is either going to go to one of the two millionaires. And if Campbell is able to raise resources, what sort of campaign he runs and how Fiorina reacts. I mean, does Fiorina focus on Campbell? It really does change the entire dynamic of the race. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Wouldn't decline to state voters be a very interesting part of this too? I mean, they'll be able to cast a ballot if they are disaffected Democrats. But Boxer has no competition.
Right.
So why not pull out a ballot on the Republican side?
Right.
And maybe you're more inclined to pick a moderate than like Tom Campbell. So
I think
knows?
So. And I do think that there are a lot of moderates or decline to state voters in this state who might have been willing to pull a lever for a Republican Senate candidate against Boxer before if they felt they had someone to vote for. Maybe Bill Jones and Matt Fong didn't fill that bill. But I think also in some ways this Senate race in part is going to become a referendum on Congress and the Obama administration. I mean, right now the precarious 60-vote majority, which I don't think anybody thinks is going to hold through this next election. But, things like health care, things like and just general approval rating of Congress and the Obama administration are going to factor in a huge, huge way come November.
Economic recovery issues in which that may play to the strength of somebody like Campbell who can talk about his experience, knowing the finances of government. Climate change issues could come back up. I mean, who knows?
I mean, the
who
two
knows?
Things people say about Tom Campbell is that he's a nice guy and that he's a man of substance. I mean, you're talking about a law professor, a former congressman who understands the nuts and bolts of government and how it works. And so running against two relative neophytes, you've got Fiorina and DeVore, who's only been in office for 4 years, 5 years, and Fiorina, who's never held office, I think that he has a more compelling case to make in the Senate race than he did in the governor's race.
Well, that's one chapter of Potomac Fever that played out this week.
Yes.
Chapter two, which is more complicated and will burn white hot faster than that one will be the Potomac Fever, a different kind of Potomac Fever than you'd think about for Arnold Schwarzenegger, that we may see next week where the governor is scheduled to go back to D.C. to start his campaign for federal money to help solve the $20 billion budget problem.
Right.
Now, the governor's budget, which was released a week ago, calls for $7 billion, and actually, depending on how you calculate it, $7 billion
or eight.
Seven or eight. Yeah, I was going to say $7 to $8 billion in federal money. Seven right up front, and then flexibility in some spending areas that would get you to about $8 billion. But $7 billion, it's balanced on $7 billion in federal money for some historical grudge matches between California and the federal government about who gets money for what. We don't get enough money back reimbursed for incarcerating undocumented immigrants, for example.
From Medi-Cal.
Yeah, and the governor's plan says if we don't get the $7 billion, then we whack a bunch of social services programs, and that's kind of the whole thing.
I didn't mean to laugh.
Give us the money, nobody gets hurt, as my headline
said. As I read
said.
Somewhere in a
as,
blog.
As my headline said, yes. This is going to be, so the governor goes back to start that campaign next week. The legislative leadership is going to go back some to There's a lot of weird dynamics here, not the least of which is that there are people, somewhat publicly, but also privately. I know that you wrote a piece about this, so you want to talk about it, and I've heard the same thing privately. There are a lot of people really concerned about the rhetoric that the governor's putting out, and that he's pushing so many points so fast, criticizing the feds, criticizing the California congressional delegation, criticizing the president's health care reform plan, you know, all of these things swirling around at once, that may not help California's case. But maybe it's a strategy.
And isn't this vintage Arnold Schwarzenegger? I mean, I can't help but think that the administration is exactly where they want to be. I mean, this is an administration that likes to pick fights, you know, and they've found a foil. I mean, the governor has consciously, after being burned a few times, ratcheted back the rhetoric vis-a-vis the legislature. But this is the same rhetoric that, you know, that we're seeing now, him having him train on Washington and calling out Barbara Boxer and, you know, whacking the administration's health care proposal in the State of the State address and then making another point of it on the budget and going on Meet the Press on Sunday and taking more shots. And
not even calling out Boxer, calling out Feinstein as well.
Well, because Feinstein called him out. So,
calling out Republican members of the California congressional delegation,
The governor loves this stuff, man. This is his bread and butter.
Vintage Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And so you know, we just got word today that the president will not meet with the governor when he goes back. Too busy, right? And the White House insists it's no slight, but this will again, you know.
Two wars, economic crisis, Haiti.
Haiti, right. But I think reading between the lines, those of us who want to draw our own conclusions will see, hey, look, it's the rhetoric. It's the rhetoric. Now, you know, this week we saw, and what I wrote about in Capital Weekly, www.capitalweekly.net, capital with an O.
I don't think you have to say the W's anymore. I think people get
CapitalWeekly.net, W with an O. No, that doesn't work.
Anyway.
We saw Speaker Karen Bass send out a release that was, you know, reading between the lines again, it was basically the message was, thank you, Obama administration, for being so wonderful. And it was a conscious effort on the part of the speaker to ratchet back the rhetoric. Now, you know, and the speaker's called out the governor for sort of taking this combative tone, saying it doesn't help, you know, when we go to Washington. So, you know, do I think that billions of dollars are going to be affected by the governor's rhetoric, whether or not, you know, the president had his feelings hurt by the governor? No. I would hope not.
Well, I don't think it's the president, though, as much. I mean, I want to focus on the congressional delegation from California.
So you're saying the president isn't that petty, but our congressional delegation is.
I'm not sure petty is the word I meant. But I think that the problem here is the relationship with the congressional delegation, the relationship on Capitol Hill. I mean, the president's got a lot of things on his plate. You know, first of all, a substance issue that we have to point out. The legislative analyst, Mac Taylor, this week, when he put out his analysis of the governor's budget or early analysis of it, said that the $7 billion number was way overblown, unreasonable, said it was more likely to be about $3 billion.
Right.
And so, you know, that could complicate things as well. And so there's a substance issue. Also on a substance issue, I think, is this notion of whether the governor should be asking for this money that he argues is this long-going, systemic, California screwed thing, or whether he should be out there asking for a stimulus money, for a second round of stimulus, which we're probably going to get anyway because there's so many states that are hurting. Mac Taylor said he thought it would be one-time money that we would get. A lot of other people, there have been a chorus of several other people who watch the California budget, who are economists, who say the governor's barking up the wrong tree here. The governor needs to be basically linking arms with the governors of 40 other states or that are hurting and say, we need a second round of stimulus, not playing this, you know, California, please, please, California is screwed. You know, it doesn't come off the right way. And it makes it too easy to say, gee, California, you've got a lot of problems you haven't fixed on your own.
Right.
I mean, it makes it easily dismissed as the dysfunctional California asking for what the governor says it's not, but nonetheless, for a bailout.
But the politics of a second stimulus are, shall we say, complicated. I mean, look, put this in the national context. You've got Democrats who are bleeding in the polls, who are worried about getting crushed and losing, you know, Senate seats, and had key retirements in the U.S. Senate, and, you know, losing House seats. And so, you know, is this really what they want to be doing, is pushing through another multi-billion-dollar bailout package right before the election? I don't know that the political minds in the Democratic Party think that that's the wisest thing to do. Now, would there be and I'm not sure there would be a huge bipartisan chorus for that stimulus. So it's, you know, the economist can say one thing, but I think that you have to view all of this through a political lens. And I think that Republicans are going to hammer this issue of the stimulus and hammer the fact that, look, we've given billions and billions of dollars away, and we have, you know, the highest deficit since World War II, and the economy is still in the tank. And you know, no more, and that you've got a lot of Republicans in Congress who are going to want to draw the line and say no, and they're going to be pressure on moderate Democrats whose seats are up for grabs to say no as well.
I just and very fair point. We'll have to see how it plays out. One of the other reasons I say that too, though, is just, you know, one of the inherent dangers, I think, when the governor starts throwing these rocks is that he does somewhat live in a bit of a glass house on this issue, because this was an issue that the governor began the recall campaign in 2003 when he dubbed himself
the Collectinator.
The Collectinator. And just to finish the thought, and in the story that I have that airs Monday morning on the California Report, go ahead and give away part of it. I only went back and pulled one piece of tape, but there were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cuts through the years of Arnold Schwarzenegger audio of him saying, we can get the money, I'll get the money, basically.
Right.
You know, and even with this very first meeting with President Bush after he won the recall election, you know, we'll get this money. Well, some people will say, what's Arnold Schwarzenegger's record on this? So when he criticizes the California delegation, what has been his level of responsibility in not solving this problem over the last 6 years?
And not only that, what is the state's responsibility vis-a-vis county government and city governments? I mean, what are state budget makers?
Talk about fair share.
Right. Yeah. What are state budget makers doing to local governments? I mean, don't cities and counties have the same – can't they make the same point? So, you know, I mean, the glass house issue, well taken, I think, in a couple of different ways.
Yeah. And so – who knows what the atmosphere is going to be like when he goes back? You know, and there's been a
chilly.
Been a whole lot of discussion too. Again, when he, you know, and they may have a strategy. I certainly want to give them credit for the strategy if they've got it. But lumping in the healthcare thing too, which is definitely a concern about California's finances, but it's feels somewhat apples and oranges.
Right. Well,
I mean, it's a healthcare reform bill, first of all, that hasn't been reconciled between the two houses of Congress.
Right.
Second of all, wouldn't kick in for several years down the road.
As Ben Nelson noted.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. So we're not talking about an Arnold Schwarzenegger era immediate California problem. Lumping. Who knows? I don't
That's
know.
What I'm saying.
I don't get paid the big bucks.
Needs
to be
a new
the,
foil.
I don't.
That's
get,
why I think this is showbiz. This is Schwarzenegger.
You know, I obviously don't get paid enough to be a big political strategist, so I must be missing something here that they know will work out in the end.
Apparently not. Gone rogue.
Yeah. No, she went to Fox News.
Yes, so I heard.
So that's going to be interesting to watch out. And we'll
she's going to replace Simon Cowell, right? Isn't that what's going on? Sarah Palin.
Fox.
No, yeah. I heard it in a jumble. I've Fox News. Never
Your
mind.
Facts are great for a journalist. I
Perfect.
Like that.
Yeah. Capital Weekly, Capital with an O.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out this coming week. Lots of interesting goings on. And something tells me next week we'll probably just have to talk about the budget again.
Boo.
Ah, boo. Anyway, for Anthony York from Capital Weekly, booing there. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.